Good morning. Today's daf and yavamos lamed tes. We're on lamed ches mad beis. Our first again today, we're going to be finishing up the mission that we started with yesterday on lamed ches mad aleph. And then the gemara gets a lot easier. But in the meantime, however, let us work our way through. What is the difficult mishnah, challenging mishnah? Go back to yesterday's daf, lamed ches mad aleph. You're in the fourth parak of the mesechta. And we are trying to ascertain in terms of what happens to her nechasim. She's a shomer yavam. Her husband, Rachmanis, died, and she is now awaiting the album to do the mitzvah of Yibam. So she's in this in-between transition stage, where she has a zika to her husband. So that we've already established numerous times over the course of the Masechta, and we have been litigating over the course of this Masechta, what exactly does that zika mean? How does that relate to her in terms of her marital status? And as we're going to be, as we discussed yesterday, and we're going to be continuing to discuss over the course of this morning, how does that relate to her financial status? So as we already pointed out yesterday, so when it comes to a woman who is married, so she has nechasim, and those nechasim belong to her, if she comes into the marriage with any nechasim. She can acquire while she's married as well, but with any nechasim that goes, she goes into the marriage, so that nechasim could be bundled up as one of two entities. It could either be nechse melug or nechse tzom barzel. And as we pointed out yesterday, nechse melug means that it's hers, but the husband is going to enjoy the payers of those of that property. The property, even if it's not property, the usage of that property, regardless, whatever the case is, the husband gets the payros. But that means that nechse melug, the best way to look at it, is that it is fundamentally hers. It appreciates, it depreciates. That all is going to be suffered by her, or enjoyed by her, depending on whether it's appreciation or depreciation. The other way that property could be bundled going into a marriage is that it could be nechse tzom barzel. Now, nechse tzom barzel basically means that it's going to go over in total to the husband, but the husband is going to appraise its value at the time of the marriage, and that appraisal is going to be written to the ksuva. The husband will not only enjoy the payros, but any appreciation or depreciation is going to be enjoyed by the husband. Meanwhile, however, upon either death or divorce, so the she's going to be reimbursed for the appraised value. Okay, so nechse tzom barzel, it's a little bit easier to look at it as his. Nechse melug, it's a little bit easier to look at it as hers. Okay, now, Rachmanis, she's a shomer yavam, and she dies. What happens there? Well, before I get to that point, let's break up the mission into two halves. First half of the Mishnah is a shomer yavam. What can she do with her nechasim? So we learned in the Mishnah that she could do whatever she wants. Bisham and Bisol, they both agree. Mocheres, nosenes. She could sell it, she could gift it. Okay. In other words, there is simply nobody else who has any kind of control over her assets, and she could sell them as she pleases. She can gift them as she pleases. Meanwhile, let's say as the shomer yavam, Rachmanis, she dies. Okay. So tragedy after tragedy. Her husband died, now she died. Okay, so now the question of what happens to her assets. So, that's the machlokes between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel in the Mishnah. So Beit Shammai is of the position of Yachloku. In other words, right now you have two people making claims to it. There's his family and her family. So both of them are making claims to it. Now her family, it's understood why they have a claim to it, because she died, unfortunately, a non-married woman. And so therefore their claim to her assets are, she's a family member and she wasn't married. Now, what is their claim to her assets? Their claim to her assets is she's a Yavama. She's a Shomer Yavam. And the Yavam could have very easily have done the mitzvah of Yibam with her. Okay, so what happens now to her assets? So that's a machlokes between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. So Beit Shammai says, Yachloku, the assets are to be divided. And Beit Hillel says, no. What's going to happen to her assets is that Chazaka, whoever has a stronger Chazaka on the assets. And now it depends on whether we're talking about the Nechse Melug or Nechse Tzom Barzel. When we're talking about the Nechse Melug, so she's got more of a chazak on those assets. Her family's going to get the Nechse Melug. When it comes to the Nechse Tzom Barzel, so he, now the he over here, meaning we're really talking about the late husband. The Yavam is a stand-in for the late husband. The Yavam family obviously is representing that thought, that line. And so therefore they're going to have a more of a chazak on a nechse tzom barzel. Okay, that's the Mishnah. Okay, in of itself already, that's pretty complicated. But then, what we're trying to do is trying to make heads and tails of the Mishnah. Meaning in the first half of the Mishnah, we're looking at the assets while she's alive. And she's unencumbered. Those assets are totally hers. and nobody can and nobody could stop her from buying, from selling. Well, buying is not really the issue. From selling the assets, from gifting the assets. So that's the ratio. And then what happened to the Sefer of the Mishnah? All of a sudden we have either Yachloku, they're going to be divided if she dies, or Nechasim Bechezkasam, according to Beis Hillel. What just happened? Meaning, what's the difference between the Reisha and the Seifa? That's a really difficult question. The Gemara is going to give, they all told, four different approaches to this answer. And yesterday we finished up with the first of the four approaches. We went over Ula's approach. Ula said the Reisha and Seifa are talking about where, obviously, she's a Shemeres Yavam. But in the Reisha, we're talking about where she was a Shemeres Yavam from Erusin. And the Seifa is where she was a Shemeres Yavam from Nisuin. And again, the not to go over exactly how that works out, but it works out. Meaning, according to Ula, so there is a difference between whether or not she's coming off Erusin or she's coming off Nisuin. Reisha is where she comes off Erusin. Seifa is where she comes off Nisuin. That's the approach of Ula. Good. That approach of Ula is where we just left off yesterday, Amalei Rabba. So we're on Lamechez Amud Beis, and we are about a dozen lines from the top of the Amud. Rabba's response to Ula, Ademiflegei Begufa, Lachemisa, Lifugu Bechaya, Olaperos. Good. So you want to highlight the point where there's a difference halachically whether she comes off of Erusin Nisuin. So great. Good. That's what the Mishnah wants to accomplish. She doesn't have to die. Meaning the Mishnah could have just simply highlighted this difference by just simply describing her peros. Meaning, what's going to be the Yavam's relationship to her peros? It's going to make a difference whether or not she's coming off of Erusin, whether she's coming off of Nisuin. So we don't have to have the second case in order to highlight this point that the Mishnah has to come up with a scenario where she dies, even if she doesn't die. Is the Yavam entitled to Peros? Well, it depends. If she's coming off of Erusin, the answer is no. If she's coming off of Nisuin, the answer would be yes. And why would the Mishnah have to introduce her death as part of the discussion? Okay, that's a strong question against Ula, Elama Rabba. So Rabba now is going to be giving our second shot in the Mishnah. Again, the question is really simple. What's the difference between the Reisha and the Seifa? Reisha, her relationship to her assets are totally unencumbered. A Seifa, once she dies, so now it's a free-for-all in terms of what happens to her assets. According to Beis Shammai, they're divided. According to Beis Hillel, the assets will be divided, but based on Chazaka. Okay, so what just happened? So Elam Rabbi David did enough lakishin nesua. So in both the Reisha and the Sefer, we're talking about where she fell Shomer Yavam after Nisuin. She was married to her husband with both stages 1 and 2. And Vizikas nesua osa suffik nesua. Now she's a Shomer Yavam, which means now that is she a married woman? Well, we don't know. Meaning maybe. When I say maybe, meaning the Yavam could do the mitzvah of Yibum and she could be married. So that means that during this period of time, she's what's going to be called a suffix nesuin. Okay. And I know suffix is a little bit confusing. It's a little bit misleading, but suffix just simply means that it could very well happen. But right now, we don't know. Now, Reisha di'i kaimei havalei evadavinu suffix. Now, while she's alive, so what is her relationship to her assets? Vadai. They're hers. Okay. And as far as the Yavam is concerned, so is he going to be owning those assets? Again, when I say own, I mean in the structure of either Nechzei Melug or Nechzei Tzom Barzel. So we don't know yet. Meaning, so he's a suffix. So while she's alive, so she falls under the category of Vadai. He, the Yavam, falls under the category of suffix. Now you understand, Vadai, suffix, obviously the Vadai is going to be stronger. That's why Vein suffix Motzi Midei Vadai. And the suffix simply is not going to overpower Vadai. So while she's alive, can she sell? Absolutely. Can she gift? Absolutely. Now, Seva de Mesa. Now, in the second half of the Mishnah, she unfortunately passed away. So now what is the story with her assets? There's a claim on the assets, not just one claim, but two claims. Now, who's claiming? Halala bain leirish, halala bain leirish. Her family's claiming, and his family's claiming. So now, it's not, when she was alive, she had not a claim on her assets. She had ownership of her assets. But now after she's dead, so now there are claims on the assets. So now we're at a stalemate. Okay, so fine. So now what do I do? So again, depends who you ask. Beis Shammai Yachloku, Beis Hillel, at work with Chazaka. V'yachloku. Okay, so that is right now the working pshat of the Mishnah according to Rabba. Eis ve'abaye. So Abaye says, really, that's so interesting. So you're telling me that the pshat in the reisha is a predicate of, well, while she's alive, she's a vadai, and the yavam is only coming mikolach safik, and it ain't safik motzi midei vadai. Are you right about that? Meaning within the shita beis shamai? So eis ve'abai le beis shamai ain't safik motzi midei vadai v'atanan. So we're going to be taking a look at not one, but two different mishnayos. We're going to look at a mishnah in Baba Basra, and we're going to look at a mishnah in Sota. First, let's start off with a mishnah in Baba Basra nafal abai zalav al aviv. So Rachmanis, the house comes down on both he and the father. Alav al Marishav, or on he and anyone else is going to be Marishim. Okay, in other words, there are two people in the house. The house collapsed. They both died. And now, which one died first? That's going to become important financially. Why? Because as far as the son is concerned, so the son had a lot of creditors, a lot of account receivables. He had regular creditors. He also had a wife who's also a creditor. Because upon death or divorce, the wife is going to be entitled to the ksuva. Okay, in other words, just to say it simply, he had creditors. He also had no money. Okay? So, Yorshe ha'av omrim ha'ben meis rishon. Now, whoever stands to inherit the father, so their argument is going to be the following. And that is that the kid died first. And he died penniless. The creditors, it's unfortunate. They're not gonna get anything. And then the dad dies second. So, in other words, we are going to be yarshening the estate of the father. And what are the creditors going to say? Well, we know what the creditors are going to say. I'm sorry. So, Omer ma ben meis rishon v'achakach meis av. U'bachov Omer, now as far as the bachov is concerned, so their argument is going to be, av meis rishon v'achakach meis ben. No, you got it all wrong. The father died first. Now, as far as the estate is concerned, the estate goes on to the kid. And now, as far as the kid is concerned, creditors come in. Creditors take. So, what we have over here, now I say it's a debate between the creditors and the Yorshe Av. Obviously, they don't know, neither of them know. When we use the word debate over here, it just simply means each one of them could advance the following argument. In other words, but of course, neither knows which one is correct. So what do you do under those circumstances? So, Beit Shammai Omrim, Yachloku Beit Omrim, Nechasim Bechaz Kasam. So what does Beit Shammai say? Beit Shammai says, Yachloku, it's going to be divided. So, V'ha'acha, and Beit Shammai says everything stays by Chazaka, but right now we're focused on Beit Shammai. V'ha'acha, Yorshe Ha'av, Vado, Ba'chov, Safek. Yorshe Ha'av, meaning they know that they're going to be inheriting the father's estate. That's not a claim. That's a natural result of Yerusha. Now, as far as the creditors are concerned, so they have a claim. But their claim is predicated on Suffolk. So now what just happened over here? So according to Beit Shammai, we see the Suffolk pulling it right away from the Vadai. Didn't you just tell me, Rabbah, that according to Beit Shammai, that's not supposed to happen? According to you, Rabbah, Beit Shammai is of the position that it ain't Suffolk Motzi Midei Vadai. So Vikasi Suffolk Motzi Midei Vadai. So the Gemara says, okay, so what are we looking at over here? A challenge to Rabbah's position. Rabbi is saying a Pshanar Mishnah. The Pshanar Mishnah only works when you say that according to Beit Shammai, ain't Safik Moshe Midei Vadai. We just learned together a Mishnah in Baba Basra. The Mishnah in Baba Basra could not be any clearer that according to Beit Shammai, even though the Yorshim are Vadai and the creditors are Safik, Beit Shammai is going to give them equal weight in their claim, and Yachloku, the money is going to get divided. So Rabbi, that's difficult. It's very difficult. So the Gemara says, okay, I know that's difficult, but Rabbi says, but I do have an answer. And my answer is going to be, Kasav Rabbi Shammai, Shtar Ha'om Elagabas Kegavoy Damai. No. So as far as the creditors are concerned, we're talking about creditors who have a note. And as far as the note is concerned, a note's powerful. And Beit Shammai says, you know how powerful a note is? It's Kegavoy Damai. It's like it's as if it's already collected. Umenatemer did not. So the Gemara says this idea that a note is considered already collected. We could see that clearly in a Mishnah Sota. Here's the Mishnah Sota. Mesu ba'alehan. So what happened? A woman was a Softa. She was warned not to seclude herself with a man. She did. And so now she has the status of a Sota. Okay. And right now, in order to clear her name, she's going to be brought to the base of Mikdash, drink the Mesota, and if she doesn't die, so then her name is cleared. Okay, so anyway, she right now is at the point where she is a sota and with a need to clear herself. And now as they're going to the base of Mikdash, so then the husband dies. So Meitzu Ba'alehem, Ad Shelo Shasu. So Beit Shammai Amrim not los ksuva sami ina shosos. So Beit Shammai is of the position that they take the ksuva. I mean, the women collect the ksuva. Now, right now, she's in a position where she was really looking to forfeit her ksuva. Obviously, an act of an adultery would be a forfeiture of her ksuva. And meanwhile, Beit Shammai says, no, she gets to collect her ksuva. Now, Beit Hillel Omrim Oshosos Olo Notlos Ksuva San. And Beit Hillel says the choice is either drink the water or don't collect the ksuva. Which the Gemara just quickly cleans up the Shita Beit Hillel. What do you mean, drink the water or else? Right now, she can't drink the water. So, Oshosos Vevi Aisha Sishto Amarachman of Aleka. No, the only circumstance in which a woman is going to be drinking the Mesota is only if the husband's alive. So right now the husband died. She doesn't have an option to drink the water. So good. So quick clarification. So the Gemara says Ela mitoch shaloshosos lo notlos ksuvasan. Ah. So for clarification purposes, what we mean is that because she can't drink, so therefore she can't collect her ksuva. Meaning, according to Beit Hillel, she forfeited her ksuva. Okay, under those circumstances. Fine. Now, but again, our focus right now is not on the Shita Beit Hillel, our focus on the Shita Beit Shammai. Right now, we don't know whether she committed adultery or not. She's in the state of suffix. Vikasi suffix, motzi midei vadai. And meanwhile, that suffix is going to be motzi midei vadai. So, how could it possibly be that according to Beit Shammai, so, notlos ksuvasam, she's going to collect her ksuva. How in the world is she collecting her ksuva? Right now, she possibly forfeited that ksuva. That's a suffix. Who's holding the ksuva money right now? So I'd say the husband, but he's dead. But in other words, his family's holding the money right now. So on a suffix, the suffix gonna pull away from a vadai? How could she collect her ksuva? Okay, that's a strong question. But the Gemara says, but we already know the answer. Meaning we said the answer in Baba Basra, but now here in the Mishnah Sota, it's even clearer. Meaning that her ksuva is obviously a note, and that note is a collectible. And according to Beit Shammai, any note which is a collectible, any account receivable, is kegavui dami, is considered as if it's already collected. Meaning her claim to the ksuva money is really strong, according to Beit Shammai. Okay, so now what comes out is the following. So now we have clarified the shita of Beit Shammai as Rabbah went on to explain. Meaning, as far as our Mishnah is concerned, so our Mishnah says that while she's alive, she can go ahead and sell and she can do whatever she wants with her assets, even though she's a Shomeres Yavam. Why? Because the Yavam is just a suffix, and she right now is a Vaday, Vein Suffik Motzi Midei Vaday. Good. So that is the pshat that Rabbah is saying in our Mishnah. The problem is that we found not one, but two different places where we find that a suffix is as strong as a vadai. But in both of those places, we ended up saying, yeah, but those are cases where there was a shtar held against the obligation. A shtar? So it's ha'omid l'gavus k'gavoy dami. It's as if it's already collected. Okay, good. The Mishnah Baba Basra, the Mishnah Sota are both talking about where there's a shtar. You can't compare either of those cases to our discussion over here. Ve'abaye l'sumeham. So the Gemara says, okay, now as far as Abai's challenge of Rabbah is concerned, so why do you start with the Mishnah of Baba Basra? Meaning, why don't you start with the Mishnah in Sota? So the Gemara says, the Muxuvas Isha Shani Mishum China. So the Gemara says, yeah, you know why Abai didn't start with the Mishnah in Sota? Because the Mishnah in Sota is talking about Ksuva. So what do we know regarding Ksuva? So we see this numerous times throughout Chas, and when we get to Ksuvas, we're going to see this a number of times, and that is that the Ksuva is not just an IOU, but it's also there to protect and secure the woman in the institution of marriage. When a woman gets married, so the Chachamim wanted to make sure that she's protected. The way the Gemara describes that is chayin. And Rashi gives more than one shot in terms of what exactly that means. Literally, the word means favor. But the basic idea over here, I am oversimplifying right now, but the basic idea is that the Chachamim were really invested in protecting the woman. And so when it comes to ksuva, maybe ksuva has a little bit more oomph than your standard note, and that the Chachamim are really looking to collect the ksuva. So in the case of Sota, we're talking about a ksuva. So there we are. The reason why Abai didn't start there is because he knew ksuva is not just a note. It's I'll use my terminology, it's a super note. So that's why we didn't want to start with the Mishnah in Sota. Velusve, let's just finish up. Velusve ksuva de masnisen. So the Gemara says, okay, so what about ksuva of our Mishnah? Meaning, okay, so we are now saying that when it comes to a note, according to Beit Shammai, Kol HaOmid LeGavos KeGavoi Dami. So the Gemara says, great. We saw that in the Mishnah in Sota. We saw the basic idea also articulated in the Mishnah Mabba Basra, that when you're holding a note, the note is as if it's already collected. Good. Now let's go back to our Mishnah. Now remember what happened in our Mishnah? She was a Shomer Zevam. And Rachmana, she died. Now, the Mishnah, if you look carefully at the language of our Mishnah, so our Mishnah seems to be litigating a number of things. Go back to our Mishnah. Let's take a look at the language of the Mishnah. Turn back to Lamed Chesamad Aleph. So Mesa, if she dies, Maya said, what do you do with Ksuvasa? At this point in time, we think right now, put a comma right there, meaning we're discussing her Ksuva, and Nechasim and Nechmasim Yotzim Ema, that's the Nechsim Elog, and that's right now how we're reading the Mishnah. Well, that's a little bit strange, because we have just said over, not once, twice over, but for Ksuva, really once over, that Ksuva is not just a note, but it's a super note. And we said regarding the ksuva is as if it's already collected. Meaning what I would expect Beit Shammai to say regarding the ksuva of our Mishnah is that as far as the ksuva is concerned, so she collects it. Again, she's dead. But in other words, her Yerushim are going to collect the ksuva. That's what you would expect our Mishnah to say. Our Mishnah doesn't seem to say that. So the Gemara says, lo pligi. Well, Beit Shammai is not arguing about the ksuva. To which the Gemara says, are you kidding? V'lo v'aktani. Look at the Mishnah. I mean, we just did it, but the Gemara is not going to quote it. Meisa ma'yasa b'ksuva sov v'nechasa ma'nechnasa v'yosim yama b'shem amrim yachloku yorshi abalim yorshi ava v'esal amrim nechnasa mechaz kasan. How can you tell me they're not arguing about the ksuva? I just read the Mishnah. I just saw the word ksuva. They're not arguing about ksuva? So hachi kamar. So the Gemara says, okay. So this is the way you're going to have to read our Mishnah. Our Mishnah reads, Meisa ma'yasa b'ksuva sov. So if she dies, what happens to her ksuva? Now, v'shavka nechasim v'yotzim ima. And then what happens is, we leave ksuva on the back burner. Meaning ksuva is not going to be really discussed between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. The next thing the Mishnah goes on to discuss is, well, here's what we do with her nechse melug. Okay. Admittedly, it's not an easy way to read the Mishnah, certainly, but the Gemara wants to defend Rabbah. Ksuva is off the table, meaning it's not open for discussion. And what they are discussing and what they are litigating is the Nechse Milog. And Beit Shammai Amrim Yachloku, Yoshe Abalim, Yoshe Av, Vesol Amrim Nechasim Bechaz Kasam. Okay. So that is a way to read the Mishnah. And I'm Ravashi, Masnis Namidekam. Ravashi says, I'll tell you what. As much as it is a difficult way to read the Mishnah, actually, it actually reads into the Mishnah. Diktani Yachloku, Yoshe Abal, Im Yoshe Ha'av. That the Yorshe Abal are going to be splitting with the Yorshe Av. V'loktani Yorshe Av im Yorshe Abal. And it doesn't go in the other direction. Shema Mina. So what you see from here is that who's the principal group that's being focused on? Im Yorshe Av. Together with the Yorshe Av. So that's the principal group that we're looking at. So the principal group that we're looking at is im Yorshe Av. It means to say that the ksuva is not really what we are litigating. What we're litigating is really her nechasim. Okay, shema mina. All right, so right now we have just wrapped up an alternative way to understand the Mishnah. Meaning, our Mishnah, there's no change in Ukimta according to Rabbah. According to Rabbah, the Mishnah is both in the Reisha and Sefer talking about just the standard, Shomer Yavam. In other words, she was married to her previous husband, both with Erusin and Nisuin. And there's a difference whether she's alive or whether after she's dead regarding her assets. Yeah, the difference is that while she's alive, she's a vadai. The avam's a suffix, ain't suffix motzimi de vadai. And then in the sefer, once she's dead, now I have claim against claim. Okay, so now we're at an impasse. What do I do in that impasse? Beit Shammai says yachloku. Beit Hillel says nechasim bechaz kasan. That is the pshat of Rabbah. All right, Danny.
Always going to be a sultan,
okay? She can never get remarried. No, what's it called? Right now, she was accused of having relations. We don't know. We don't know if she did or she didn't. In terms of her status regarding her husband, so it can only be clarified through the Mesota. But we don't have evidence that she committed adultery. We have a lot of suspicion.
She's now a single woman. She's just called a sota, though.
Sota meaning because of her actions. Now she forfeited her ksuva. Okay. Right. Her actions were irresponsible. So she forfeited her ksuva. But in other words, we don't know she committed adultery. Okay. Well, the word sota is, we come, every time we talk about sota, it's confusing because sota means that either, sota sometimes means we know she committed adultery. Sota just simply means is that we have a strong suspicion because she secluded herself with a man. This Mishnah over here is talking about the latter, not the former. Okay. Next. Abaye Amar. Okay, so we are now about to enter the third pshat in our Mishnah. Third pshat of our Mishnah, again, the difference between the Reisha and the Seifa. In the Reisha, what is our Shemar Yovim doing with her Nechasim? Whatever she'd like. In the Seifa, after she's dead, what happens to her Nechasim? Unclear. Meaning it's now Suffolk. Beit Shammai says Yechloku, and Beis Hillel says keep everything in their Chazaka. Nichsei Malug stays by her family. Nichsei Tzomim Barzel stays by his family. So, but in other words, there's clearly a difference between the Reisha and the Seifa. And again, what's the difference? So far, between yesterday and today, we went over the pshatim of Ula and Rabbah. We have two more pshatim to go through. One's going to be Abai and the other one's going to be Rava. Okay, this is standard progression, by the way. Ula, maybe not so standard, but to go from Rabbah to Abaye to Rava, that's pretty standard. So now we're at Abaye. Abaye Amaran Lamed Chesam Adbeis, we're two lines from the bottom. So Abaye says the following in terms of understanding the difference between the Reisha and the Seifa. So Abaye Amar Reisha Denafla La Kishi Shomer Yavam. Seifa Denafla Kishi Tachtav. So there is a difference between the Reisha and the Seifa in the Reisha. So she acquired that money. When did she acquire those assets? When did she do so? While she was a Shomer Yavam. And meanwhile, in the Seifa, she acquired those assets. She inherited those assets while she was already married to her first husband. Oh. So in other words, the question now is that when did she acquire those assets? It's really that simple. Now let's spell this out. What does that mean? So Vikasavra by Yadok Yada. Now Abai is of the position of Yadok Yada. This question of Yadok Yada or Yado, Yado Adifa Miyada, it's a very basic question regarding the balance of power between husband and wife over her assets. Okay. Meaning, look, as far as her assets are concerned, when a woman is married, so we already went over this, let's go over it again. In other words, the assets are hers. However, the husband has a certain amount of control over it. Now, again, we know that he has the payros over those assets. He's going to get all the production, all the produce. We also know that she can't sell the assets while they're married. So that much we know. But in terms of apportioning, assigning power, okay, is it 50-50? Now, again, I use the word 50-50. It's not a partnership. So using the words 50-50 is a little bit misleading. So, but nevertheless, it's almost like, I'm just using 50-50 over here as a mushel. It's just a way of understanding the Gemara's point. So the way that Abaye sees it is Yado Ki Yada, is that basically, he's equal to her when they're married. Okay, now, he's equal to her when they're married, so now what? Look at Rashi. Top Rashi over here on Lamed Tes Amud Aleph. He writes, Medu'uki plutai benafula tachta ve'afilo hachla beisal nechasim becheskasam. So, we'll say like this. In the Sefer of the Mishnah, we're talking about where she acquired the assets when she was married to her first husband, to her original husband. Okay. Now, according to Beisal, what's the halacha? The halacha is that in the event that she dies, so as a Shomer Yavam, so now it's going to get split, but it's going to get split based on Chazaka. Rashi explains. Hachle based on the Chas Meches Kasavra by Nesua Yado Ki Yada. While they were married, so they are an equal footing with one another. Now, Velo Yoser, in other words, in just that, meaning it's 50-50. Now, Hilkach Kishameis Ve'in Liavam Ba Elazika. Now, the husband dies, and now she moves over to the Yavam. Now, before marriage, so the Yavam is just it has a Zika, which means what? Means that the Yavam, although he's a stand-in for his brother, at this point, while he's just a Yavam, so he's a notch lower. Oh. So now Yado is a little bit less than Yada. Yado Gria Miyada. Unechasim Bechezkasa. And now where does that put her Nechasim? It puts it in her Chazaka. Now, and now, as far as Beis Shammai is concerned, so what Beis Shammai will tell you is the following. No, here's how it starts. When married, so his hand is greater than her hand. Okay, now. Ukishemes yada yavam ki yada. And now what happens is that when he dies, now the yavam is a stand-in. So again, the same phenomena occurs in which the yavam is going to be a nashlower, but a nashlower means now that they are equal, they're balanced, and therefore yachloku, and therefore it's to be divided. So this is according to Abaye, the machlokus between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Machlokus is that she acquired the assets while she was married to her first husband. And now a question of koach, of power of ownership over that. And again, I'm using the word ownership over here loosely, because the husband's not the owner of those assets. He just simply has a certain amount of control that he can exercise over those assets. But that control that he has, is it equivalent to hers? Is it greater than hers? So the way Abaye expresses it is that according to Beis Hillel, equivalent. Ah, so then when, that means to say that now when the husband dies, and now she moves over to the Yavam right now at this stage is going to be less than equivalent. Masha'in can, according to Beis Shammai, he starts off, he meaning the first husband starts off greater than. So, and then what happens is that when he dies, the Yavam now becomes equal. That's why then in the event of her death now, as the Shomer Shavam, so according to Beis Hillel, she, meaning her family, keeps all the Nechsim Elog, and according to Beis Shammai, Yachlok, it's going to be divided. This is the pshat that Abai is offering. And just as a reminder, meaning in the Reisha, so Abai will tell you, you know what happened in the Reisha? She acquired all those assets after her original husband died. And therefore, she could do whatever she wants, because there is nobody else who has any kind of control over those assets. Okay, good. That's the pshat of Abaye. The Gemara says, Amale Rava, I de nafula kishi tachtav de baal, de kulam ala pligi di ado adifa miyada. And Rava just simply says to Abaye, I disagree with your basic premise that there is an opinion out there that when they're married, yado ki yada, they're equal. No. When they're married, everyone's in agreement is yado, is adifa miyada. Okay, how does he know that? Okay, not totally clear. Anyway, so Rava disagrees with the basic premise of Abaye. So in the absence now of this pshat, so what do we have to do? So this is going to be round number four. Round number four, where the Gemara now, Rava is now going to give a pshat in our Mishnah. What's the difference between the Reish and the Seifa? Ella, I David in enough luck is she shomer yavam. We are talking about where the assets came to her while she was a shomer yavam. Reisha delo avav maimer sefer davar ba maimer, and the difference between the Reisha and the sefer is whether or not the yavam did maimer with her. Vikasav avav rav maimer lebe shamayu sevadai rusa. And now what does maimer do? So here we go. This should sound familiar. This is going to be we discussed it a significant amount earlier, almost a full daf earlier in this Masechta. And now we get to discuss it again here in today's daf. And that is that according to Beis Shammai, Mimer is significant. How significant? So we are discussing it from a financial standpoint. So according to Rava, what Mimer does for Beis Shammai is it Ose Vadai Rusa, makes her a Vadai Rusa, and Vesafik Nesua. And it makes her a Safik Nesua. Now, Vadai Arusa L'Tchos Betzara. So, Vadai Arusa, so that means to say that what it can do is that there is no longer any other co-wife that's going to be eligible for the mitzvah of Yibum. Meaning, basically, it locks her Zika in. Blocks the other co-wives from being able to candidacy for Yibum. Now, V'Safik Nesua, on the other hand, also, but it makes it a suffix nesua, lachlok b'nechasim. And that means to say that she's not married yet. And so therefore, upon her death, so her nechasim are going to be divided. Okay, this is now going to be our fourth pshat in our Mishnah. The safe of the Mishnah is talking about where Maimer was done. Itmar mishmei derav lazer kavase derava. V'itmar mishmei derav yosei b'rabbi chenin kavase d'abaye. The Amoraim and Eretz Yisrael, so they're also split in terms of how to learn our Mishnah. And so one of them holds like a Rav, and the other one holds like a Baye. Umi amar Rebbe Lazar hachi. Now we just had Rebbe Lazar line up with Rava. The Gemara says that's going to be a little bit difficult. Hachi v'hama Rebbe Lazar maimer lebe shamai ain akona ela litchos b'tzar bavad. So this we said earlier in our Masechta that according to Rebbe Lazar the Amora, according to Rebbe Lazar, so what maimer does for Beis Shammai, limited. he took the most limited viewpoint of what Maimer does for Beit Shammai. Meaning we know Maimer for Beit Shammai is more significant, but how much more significant? So what we learned is that according to Rabbi Lazar, all it does, it just blocks. It blocks the other tzaras. But that's it. So the Gemara says, so if that's true, so how can you tell me now that Pshat in our Mishnah is that Rabbi Lazar learns like Rava? Rava says the whole difference between the Reish and the Sefer is Maimer and what Maimer is able to accomplish. The Gemara says it's very difficult because we know that Rabbi Lazar says Rabbi Lazar was a minimalist as it applies to Beit Shammai and his viewpoint on Maimer. So the Gemara says Epoch. So the Gemara says, okay, so I'll tell you what. So what we'll have to do in order to make this puzzle fit is that we're going to have Rabbi Lazar not going like Rava, but we'll have him going like Abaye. Okay. So the Ibai say Tepoch. Or the Gemara says alternatively no. Maybe Amasar is good. Meaning Rabbi Lazar really does hold like Rava. Amalacha Rabbi Lazar, ki amri ana de lo sagila beget. Ela debay nami chalitza, debay nami chalitza. It could just simply mean that when Rabbi Lazar was taking his minimalist view of Maimer, it just simply meant from a Nisuan standpoint. Meaning if I'm learning Evan Ezra right now and looking at the marriage aspect of it, so that's where he takes a minimalist view. And that means to say that what did Maimer accomplish? Not a whole lot. All right, let's say the Yavam, after having done Maimer, he changes his mind and he wants to recant. So what must he do? So first of all, he has to give her a get because he did Maimer. But that's insufficient. He also has to do Chalitza as well. So from an Isha standpoint, so that's all Rebbe Lazar meant. But from a money standpoint, maybe Maimer does more. Maybe from a Choshe Mishpat standpoint, from a Mamana standpoint, maybe even according to Rabbi Lazar, Maimer accomplishes a lot more. Okay, so that's another way we could say it. So we can have Rabbi Lazar align with Rava, but we're just going to have to be a little bit fancy in terms of the way we understood Rabbi Lazar vis-a-vis his viewpoint of Maimer and Beit Shammai. Okay. Amra Papa Diuga de Masis and Kavasa de Abaye. As far as reading the Mishnah reads most clearly like Abaye. Meaning right now on the table, what we have all told is four Pshatim in the Mishnah. And right now we're really focusing on Pshatim numbers 3 and 4. 3 was Abaye and 4 was Rava. The third Pshat of Abaye is understanding that the difference between the Reish and the Seifa is a question of when did she inherit the assets? While she was married to her first husband, or only as a Shomer Yavam. The Reish is talking about where she inherited while she was a Shomer Yavam. Seif is talking about where she inherited it while she was married to the first husband. The Rava's Pshat in our Mishnah is that it's just a question of whether Maimer is done or Maimer is not done. In the Reisha, Maimer was not done. In the Sefer, Maimer was done. Okay. Now the Gemara is just pointing out, Rav Ashi is pointing out, when I read the Mishnah, the smoothest reading of the Mishnah really goes like Abaye. Why? V'avagav dekasha mesa. Now, it's difficult for Abaye in terms of why do we need to introduce her death? Because really, that's not a relevant detail. Meaning, what's relevant and what's critical is when did she inherit the assets? So, diktan nechasam hanechnas v'yotzimima. But really, what's the tell of the Mishnah? How come the Mishnah reads so smoothly for Abaye, even though the Gemara just acknowledged it's not so smooth? But there is a smoothness to it, because how did the Mishnah describe her nechnasim alug? Nechnasim ha, nechnasim v'yotzim ima. It's a funny language. The Gemara points out, my nechnasim and my yotzim. So my lav nechnasim l'rishus abal v'yotzim, l'rishus abal, l'rishus av. Because what happened was, is that it was first in the rishus abal, meaning she inherited those assets while she was married to her first husband, and now because he died, so now those assets are moving. The avagav de kasha mesa, and the Gemara is just simply acknowledging, yeah, and the Mishnah describing her death, which according to Abaye is not critical for this discussion. So ademifically begufa olachamisa lifugu bechayil aperos v'sulamidi, but still that question of Abaye was such a compelling question. Meaning, if you're going to go with another pshat. They go back earlier in the Gemara to Rabba's pshat or to Ula's pshat. So why are we having her die? In other words, even without her dying, right? Isn't the question going to be on basically on the status of her peros? Okay, so really, Abaye is giving what Rav Ashi believes to be the smoothest reading of our Mishnah. Okay, Adkan. Vesulamidi in the Gemara says, and there's really nothing more to talk about it. Okay. After having discussed it for over an amud. But that's it. And end of discussion. Okay. When all told, by the way, that for sure is going to be the most challenging part of today's daf. And that is our Mishnah. So our Mishnah, going back to yesterday's daf, Lamed Ches Amud Aleph. So our Mishnah, litigated what happens to the Shomeres Yavam. What is she going to be able to do with her assets, her Nichsim Lug assets? So while she's a Shomeres Yavam, so go ahead, sell them, gift them, whatever she'd like to do with it. But what if she dies? So the Mishnah says, okay, we have a machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Beis Shammai says divide it. Beis Hillel says everything stays by its chazaka, by its presumed owner. And again, it depends on which assets we're talking about. And then just a simple question, really simple, of what's the difference between the Reisha and the Seifa? How come in the Reisha she's unencumbered? How come in the Seifa, all of a sudden her assets, we're having counterclaims on her assets? Wasn't the assets hers when she was alive? So why are we having any kind of dispute whatsoever after she died? That's the question. It's a simple question. What's the difference between the Reisha and the Seifa? And then, as far as the Gemara is concerned, then it gets complicated. Because we had no less than four different answers to this question. Ula Rava, Abaye, and Rava. And I'm not going to, even as a summary, I'm not going to go through each one of the answers, but that is the that was the first part of today's daf. We move on. We're on Lamed Tes Amud Aleph. We're halfway down in the Amud. So Kansa Arehi V'chule. Now what happens when the Ava marries her? So Mazel Tov, their husband and wife. So Lamai Hilchasa, their husband and wife, that's great. What's the Nafkamina? So I'm Rav Yosef, Rabbi Chanina, Lamar Shemagar Shabaget, Umachzira. So I'll tell you how it's a Nafkamina, meaning... So once they are lawfully wedded and they are husband and wife, so let's say now he decides now that it's not going to be a functioning relationship and he wants to divorce her. So how does he divorce her? With a get, because they were married. In other words, Chalitza is now totally out of the discussion. Let's say after he divorced her, so he's a little bit fickle, obviously, and then he says, you know what, let's try it again, and he wants to marry her. Okay, good, he can marry her again. So, Migarsha beget pshita sakadach amin ahol v'ksiv alachal alisha v'yibma am rachman avadayin yivume erishon ala bechalitza in beget lo. So, kamash malan. So, the Gemara says, as far as giving her a get, what's the havamina would have been, is that, well, maybe we're still in the context of yibum. And once we're in the context of yibum, so maybe not get, but rather chalitza.
You did yibum already.
Okay, good. So, the Gemara is just presenting a havamina. In other words, what would I have thought? What alternative thought would I have had? The conclusion is what you just said, what the Gemara just said. And Machzira, and now after he divorced her, he wants to go ahead and remarry her, so he could do so. So Pshita, the Gemara says, I think that's obvious, right? Gemara says, no, not necessarily. Because Sa'aka dat chamina mitzvah derami rachman Allah avda hashta tekam ala b'yisra eshazach. So the Gemara says, look, there was a mitzvah. There was a mitzvah. He did the mitzvah. And then he divorced her. So I might have entertained the idea that once he divorced her, so where are we? Back to square one. Meaning, what is she? She's Eshazach. So let him do Yibam. He did it already. By him divorcing her, maybe the mitzvah of Yibam now is officially over. And maybe we're reverting back to Eshazach. That's the Havamina. So Kamash Malan, the Gemara says, okay. And the Chiddush is no. Once he marries her, the entire nature of the relationship is husband and wife. And we no longer regard her to him as the Yavama. The Gemara says, I kind of like that Havamina. I liked it. So, Amakra v'lacha l'alisha. Kevin shalacha, reikish l'lachol davar. Yeah, okay, good. You like the Havamina? That's great. We have a pasuk. And the pasuk says, v'lacha l'alisha. Once he takes her as a wife, that's it. They are husband and wife. The relationship is a husband-wife relationship. And again, he divorces her, get. He wants to remarry her, he may do so. Okay. Uvavacha take suvasa. So, what is securing her ksuva? So again, let's remind each other. She was married to her first husband. He obviously wrote a ksuva when he married her. That ksuva, don't think about the nechasim, right? The nechasim it's a little bit complicated, a little bit confusing. Don't think about the nechasim. She comes into the marriage with the nechasim. It could be nechasim meluga, it could be nechasim tzom barzal. That's not what we're discussing right now. We're talking about her ksuva. And I say her ksuva, meaning specifically, the money that he's going to owe her upon death or divorce. Okay, so that is a note. And now, what's securing the note? So his assets. His assets are there, all going to be there to back up the note. Good. Now, in the event that he dies and the brother does the mitzvah of Yibum, so the brother inherits all those assets. Good. which assets are there now to secure the note? All the assets that he inherited. Meaning he does not have to put up his own assets to secure that note. That note is going to be secured by the assets of the first husband. That's what we learned in the Mishnah. The Gemara wants to know why. So my time. So Isha ikna lo min ha-shamayim. V'i leisla min ha-rishon tekinu lo mishini. Kedei shalo tei kalabein av lo-tziyah. So the Gemara makes 2 points. Point number one of the Gemara is that, why is it that the security of that note is coming from the assets of the first husband? Because over here, it's a shidduch, but the shadchan over here is a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Oh. He did not select, he did not elect to marry this woman. Circumstances. Hashkacha told him that he's going to be marrying this woman. So since Hashkacha told him he's going to be marrying this woman, so the Chachamim said, you know what, let's cut this man a break. Okay? In other words, if you elect to marry a woman, so fine. So you're going to be now responsible and your assets are going to be securing the note. But over here in this circumstance, being that you didn't elect to marry her, okay, so the Chachamim said, you don't have to put up your assets against the note. Those assets that you inherited, they're going to secure the note. Second point of the Gemara. And that is Rachmanus. Let's say your brother died penniless. So now, what's going to have to happen is the following. So even though, despite the fact that this is a shidduch min ha-shamayim, and you didn't choose this, and Hashkacha put this woman now as your wife. So all that's true, but at the same time, however, you can't ignore the institution of ksuva. Meaning, what is the institution of ksuva? It is principally to make the husband think two times before divorcing his wife. In other words, dinner didn't come out good. Okay, that's it. Let's move on from here. So the ksuva, and obviously I'm giving a silly example, but the ksuva is there to basically get the man literally invested in the marriage. In other words, so that if he divorces her, there's going to be a financial consequence. Now, sometimes it's worth it to him. But in other words, but it'll get the person to think. And that's exactly one of the principal reasons of having a ksuva. So if the brother died penniless, so we can't go on without a ksuva. Meaning if he elects to do the mitzvah of Yibum, absolutely need a ksuva. He's going to have to put up his assets against the ksuva. Okay. If so be it. We're on Lamed Tes Amud Aleph. We're at the Mishnah Mitzvah Begadol Yabim. Now, I know this sounds like been here, done that, which is true, but we're going to be discussing it in a little bit more detail. Back on Chavdala, we saw a Mishnah on Chavdala Amud Aleph that discussed the mitzvah is by the Gadol. Although, if you recall, we spent a lot of time talking about how to interpret the Pesukim in the Torah, and generally speaking, Ein Mikra Yotzei Midei Pshuto. This is an example where Mikra Yotzei Midei Pshuto. If you're not fully following me right now, go back to Chavdalet, see the Gemara back on Chavdalet. Anyway, mitzvah begadol yabim. The mitzvah is by the oldest brother. Lo ratza. Now let's say he declines. He has the first right of refusal. Now he shouldn't, but he did. So now, ma'alchin akol achin. So now what we do is that we go down from there. We go to the next brother. The way the Rambam describes it is that we go in order of age. In other words, from oldest to youngest. Okay. So, lo ratzu chosren etzel gadol. Now let's say a whole bunch of no's. Okay. So now what we do is we go back to the oldest brother. Ve'omrim lo alecha mitzvah. So we say to the oldest brother, look, you are first and foremost in terms of this mitzvah. We went to all the other brothers. They also said no. So now your job. But over here, your job doesn't mean that you have to marry her. Your job simply means you have to do something. You have to address the Zika. So either do Yibam or do Chalitza. So, oh, Chalos Yabem. Okay. But now you have to do it. So, Tala B'katan, Achi Agdel O'Begadol, Shiavo Mimidina Siyam, Ocher Shoshota. So let's say the oldest brother says, look, I got some great ideas. Okay. And over here, this is sarcasm dripping. I got great ideas. Look. Right now, I have a brother 7 years of age. Okay. Why don't we wait 6 years? That's one idea. Or, listen, I got a brother right now who's out in the Far East. He'll come back. I don't know when, but he'll come back. Why don't we wait for him? Or let's say there's a brother, Cher Shoshota, right? Look, I got a brother, but not mentally competent, either through Cher or Shota, whatever, not mentally competent. But you know, medicine is progressing. And who knows? Maybe they'll find a cure. So I got these great ideas. So what do we say to this person with these great ideas? Ain't show them low. They're not great ideas. They're just the opposite of great ideas. They're awful ideas. And once again, it's very simple. And that is, you gotta take care of it. Itmar, bias katan v'chalitzas gadol. So the Gemara now is gonna bring in a really interesting machlokus amongst the Amoraim. Okay. Now the word katan over here, as we're using it over here, not to be confused with our Mishnah. When our Mishnah used the word katan, our Mishnah meant, like I described it, a 6-year-old, a 7-year-old, in other words, a minor. Over here, the word katan, as we're using it now in the Gemara, just simply means a younger brother. Okay. So, let's say, bias katan v'chalitzas gadol. Right now, here's the options. We went to the oldest, he said, not interested in Yibum. Just not, for whatever reason, doesn't matter. Not interested in Yibum. Okay. Now, we caught word that one of the younger brothers is ready to do Yibum. Oh. The older brother says, look, you want me to do chalitza? I'm fine with that. Oh. So now, what's better? Is it better for the older brother to do chalitza? Or is it better for a younger brother, younger over here, not minor, just younger? Is it better for a younger brother to go ahead and do the mitzvah of Yibum? Okay, good. What is this? It's called the machlokas. So, pligi bar Rav Yochanan, Rav Yishuv, ben Levi, chadam Rabbi Yehuda katan adifa, v'chadam chalitzas gadol adifa. So, it's a machlokas. Man dam Rabbi Yehuda katan adifa, da mitzvah b'yibum. Okay. Now,
can I ask, why is this controversial?
Ah, good. Perfect. So, according to one position, so is exactly as you just suggested. Meaning, if somebody's ready to do the mitzvah of Yibum, let's do it. Let's do the mitzvah of Yibum. That's preferable. That's the goal. And the alternative way to say it, in other words, the counter argument would be the following. If the gadol is ready to exercise the zika, address the zika, so then legabe all the other brothers, vis-a-vis all the other brothers, there simply is no mitzvah. Now, the way we could say this a lot of ways, but I guess the simplest way to say it, I'm juggling in my head a lot of ways to say it, but I guess the simplest way to say it would be the following, that even though chalitza is clearly not the mitzvah, in other words, the preferable mitzvah is to do the mitzvah of Yibum, but chalitza serves as a stand-in to the mitzvah, meaning either do Yibum or do chalitza, obviously what's preferred is Yibum, but chalitza serves as a stand-in. There was a Rashi that we saw early in the Masechta, really early on in the Masechta, in the Esei Dochelosase Gemaras, where Rashi over there says that Chalitza and Yibum are equivalent to one another. Meaning, again, we all know that Yibum obviously is the goal. It's what the Torah wants. But in terms of the where Chalitza stands on the depth chart, so we saw Rashi earlier that said it's on equal footing with that of Yibum. As such, so once the gadol is ready to address the zika, either through Yibum or Chalitza, so no, the younger brothers just simply don't even have a mitzvah opportunity.
Aren't you mevatel Yibum here?
Yeah, correct. But again, just right. Consider what I just suggested: that Chalitza is an equal substitute for Yibum. So you weren't mevatel Yibum, meaning you addressed the zika. Okay, I know intuitively the first position sounds better, but we have two opinions amongst the Amoraim. Mitzvah, it's a mitzvah to understand each of the positions. Okay. Tanan, so what are we going to do? What we classically do, and that is we litigate. So let's take a look at our Mishnah. Lo rasa machzir and alkol achin. So he didn't want, he meaning clearly the oldest brother. So he didn't want. So now we go around. So what exactly didn't he want to do? So my love, la rasa liyabim alachlots. So what he didn't want to do is he didn't want to do Yibum. He was totally fine doing chalitza. He didn't want to do Yibum. And what does the Mishnah tell us? V'katani mehalchin etz la'achin. Shema mina. Bi'ez katan adifa. And still, we go to the younger brothers. Okay, good. We seem to have a good proof. The Gemara says, yeah, but you made an assumption. Lo rasa lachlos v'lo liyabim. So the Gemara says, no. What the older brother didn't want to do is anything. He was just simply, he was in a bad place. I don't want to do Yibum. I don't want to do Chalitza. Leave me alone. So the Gemara says, okay. So then the Gemara says, okay. Now as we turn to each of the brothers, we have to assume it's the same response. Leave me alone. So am I chosen etzal gadol? So the Gemara says, so I don't understand. If every one of the brothers is just simply in a bad place in life, and none of them want to do Chalitza, none of them want to do Yibum, so the Gemara says, so why then are we going back to the oldest brother? Meaning, it's right now, isn't everyone basically just being totally resistant? We're going to have to force somebody Why we go back to the oldest brother? So le michfe le didu. Why not just simply force the youngest brother? Anyway, we have him here in the courtroom anyway. So the Gemara says, no, kevin de mitzvah la di de ramya li di de kafinan. So the Gemara says, okay, I hear you, but when all said and done, the principal mitzvah goes to the oldest. Everybody was just simply saying no. Nobody was ready to participate at all. It's really terrible. But nobody wants to participate at all. So now, since the principal mitzvah is going on the oldest brother, that's why we go back to him. Even though ultimately all we're getting from him is just simply chalitza. Tanan. Let's do this again. Next part of the Mishnah. Tala b'kat nachi agdil, ein shomim lo. So, what was his brilliant idea back in the Mishnah? Let's wait 6 years until the youngest brother grows up. So we don't listen to him. Now the ebis katan adifa my ain't shomim lo nintar. So the Gemara says, wait 1 second. If you tell me that the bias katan is better, so maybe it's better to wait 6 years. Because what may end up happening in 6 years is that we may get a yibum. And aren't you telling me that the yibum of a younger brother is going to be better than the chalitza of an older brother? So dilma gadol mi yabim. Ula tamech v'gadolachi yavim imidinas yamin shomim lo amai nintar dilma asi v'chalitz. So the Gemara says, that argument's not compelling because again, let's take a look at another one of his brilliant ideas. I have a brother in the Far East. Let's wait for him to come back. So what do we say? No, let's not wait. Now that's not, in other words, there, he very well may say yes when he comes back. So, Ella, just give me a moment. Ella kol shiuya mitzvah lo mishayna. So the Gemara says, well, I'll tell you why neither of them are brilliant ideas. They're not brilliant ideas simply because we don't delay. We have a mitzvah opportunity. You have a mitzvah opportunity, so do it now. You may get a better return by waiting. Yeah, I understand that. So that's investments. But right now we're talking about mitzvahs. So ein mitzvah ela b'shaita, or as the Gemara over here expresses it, shuilo m'shaina. We just simply don't delay mitzvahs.
Can they do mimer or kedushin with the katan?
If they're going to do mimer with the katan,
yeah.
Well, again, over here, we're not even. That's already.
If it's delayed, but it's delayed with some a definitive outcome.
Or you can't. In other words, the cotton can't do anything. He's a cotton.
Right.
Yeah. So the Gemara has an alternate way to understand the machlokas, and this alternate way will certainly speak to at least for sure the people here in the room, because people here in the room were clearly favoring the position that bia of a younger brother is certainly better than chalitza of the oldest brother. Good. The Gemara says in the second version of this discussion, everyone agrees to that point. Good. And intuitively, I think we're all more comfortable with it. So the good. But we do know there's a machlokas. Where's there a machlokas? So, debias katan adifa, can you keep ligi but chalitza's katan? The machlokas is going to be chalitza's katan. That's where there's going to be a machlokas. Vahachi itmar chalitzas katan vachalitzas gadol pligi bar Rav Yochum Rav Yeshua ben Levi chanamar chalitzas gadol difa vachanamar ki adad dininu. So let's say, right, no one's interested in doing yibum, right, but you have multiple brothers who are ready to do chalitza. At that point in time, is there a preference? Machlokas. That's a machlokas. Meaning, if one of the younger brothers wants to do yibum, nothing to discuss. We'll go to the younger brother to do the mitzvah of yibum. So but if everyone's ready to do chalitza, so now is there a preference? So, man damar chalitza gadol adifa da mitzvah begadol. So again, let's provide svara. So for the position that the gadol should be doing chalitza, yeah, because it's principally his mitzvah. Ve'idach yamin a mitzvah begadol le'inyan yibum, aval le'inyan chalitza kadad inenu. And the counter argument would be, yeah, you know what the principal mitzvah is for the oldest brother? To do the mitzvah of yibum. Right now, he doesn't want to do yibum, it's chalitza. So they're all on equal footing when it comes to chalitza. Tanan la rasu chosun etzel gadol. So again, now we're going to do the same thing we did previously. We're going to look at our Mishnah. We're going to try to be medayik in our Mishnah. Our Mishnah quotes. Our Gemara quotes the Mishnah. Lo rasu chosun etzel gadol. So they say no. We go back to the gadol. So again, what are they saying no to? So my love la rasu liabem alachlus v'kitani chosun etzel gadol v'shmamina chalitzas gadol adifa. So what all the brothers are saying no to is chalitza. Again, we don't know this. We're injecting that into the Mishnah. But okay, could be. They're all saying no to chalitza. And what does the Mishnah tell us? Oh, We go back to the oldest brother. So he could do chalitza. We have a raya that chalitza, even though it's just chalitza, we're going to go to the oldest brother for chalitza. Lo. The Gemara says no. Lo, Rasul, lo, lachlos, lo, liabim. No. What they're saying no to is everything. They're saying no to yibum. They're also saying no to chalitza. The gavasei gavagadol, lo, Rasul, lo, lachlos, lo, liabim. So the Gemara says, okay. But again, if that's the case, you have to be consistent. Gadol's also saying no to everything. So the Gemara says, alamai chosenetzo gadol, lemichfe. Lichfe lididu. Well, look, if we're going to be forcing anyway, what difference does it make who I force? So kevin de mitzvah, Allah adidei ram yad lididei kaifinan. So the Gemara says, yeah, but that's true. But again, because the principal mitzvah belongs to the oldest brother, so we're going to force him. Tashma tala begadol achi yavah mimidines yamein shaman lo. So if you're tala begadol, again, the brilliant ideas of the oldest brother, why don't we wait for one of the other brothers either to come back or to grow up? So we don't wait. Ein shaman lo. Nav isa kadacha chalitzas gadol difa. Amayin shaman lo nito dima asi v'chalitz. So the Gemara says, if you want to tell me that chalitzas gadol is better, it's preferable, so why don't we listen to him? So I may have another brother coming back, and who knows? He may do yibum, but he may end up doing chalitza. Ulatamech bekadna shiagdol ein shaman lo. Amayin nito dima gadol miyabim. So the Gemara says, okay. But in the case of the katan, we don't even know what he's going to do. Meaning, he could very well be that he's going to grow up and he's going to want to do yibum. So again, over there, the reason why we don't listen to him is simply because it would delay the mitzvah. Even though we may even get a better result in delaying the mitzvah, but we don't delay it.
Does it matter how old the woman is?
Right. In other words, there is a discussion. We kind of touched on this earlier in the Masechta. If the Yavam and the Yavama are just simply not compatible, in other words, in terms of age, so what Basin does is Basin advises in terms of what they should do.
Okay. How do they force the brother in the case where they, what's the method that they use?
Coercion.
Coercion?
I need to explain to you coercion?
No, no.
I didn't think so.
But I think I have different methods.
No. You're thinking good. Okay.
I have different methods.
Tanan Hasam, we learned in a Mishnah over there, mitzvah Yibam Kodemus, the mitzvah Chalitza. So the Mishnah over there, the mitzvah of Yibam is before the mitzvah of Chalitza. It's a Mishnah Becharos. Now, it's a Mishnah Becharos. It's a funny location for discussing Yibam, right? Probably the best place to discuss the mitzvah of Yibam is right here in our Masecht, in Yavamos. But if you look over there at the end of the first parak of Becharos, you'll see, right, the Mishnayos do that. The Mishnayos get into a certain pattern, and based on that pattern, so we talk about Kedima, like what's preferable, right? If I remember correctly, oh, Mamish, it's the right time to talk about it. The Petr Chamor, right? What's better? Is the Petr Chamor better? Is the Rifa better? Anyway, okay, not for now. So anyway, Mitzvah Yibam Kodemus, the Mitzvah Chalitza. Rishon Hashem is Kavon Hashem Mitzvah. Now, that's, of course, when the mitzvah was done l'shem shemayim, was done for the right reason. Right reason, simply, it's a mitzvah, and you want to be making shame. But achshav shem is kafen l'shem mitzvah, amru mitzvah chalitza, kodem mitzvah yibum. The Mishnah Becharos goes on to describe, and we're going to be discussing this in tomorrow's detail, in tomorrow's Gemara in more detail. And that is that if the kavanas are not right, if they're not doing l'shem shemayim, so then do chalitza over that of yibum. Okay, amarav ein kofin. Okay, so Rav says ain't kofin. The Rashi right here on the top writes the following: Amar Rav ain't kofin, inich la tarvay li yavume ain't kofin oso lachlots. So what we'll do is that if they're both agreeable to yibum, so good. So we're not going to be forcing to do chalitza. The name of lav la mitzvah, right? Yeah. The name of the mitzvah mechavne. Right. In other words, we just learned together that if their kavanas are not in the right place, so then they shouldn't be doing yibum. But we don't force that. Upaga b'sreishasach ella yibay miyabim umiyuhecha dehutzav liyibum veihi amar lo beinale v'amad varim nikarim imatzin leatiyu v'lamar lo chalosla amanashititin lo masayim zuz mat inale. All right. If let's say she's not interested in the mitzvah of yibum, so what we'll try to do is we'll try to steer him away from the mitzvah of yibum. But in kofin, the way Rashi understands it is that, look, we just learned together that nowadays chalitza is really preferable, but we don't force chalitza. Okay, in terms of this is where you have a departure between Ashkenazim and Sephardim in terms of the mitzvah of Yibum. It's a really basic issue, in that Ashkenazim for many centuries, Ashkenazim have gone with the elected with chalitza. Ashkenazim do not do Yibum. The Sephardim, like our Gemara over here says, meaning that Sephardim still maintain a certain degree of the mitzvah of Yibum, even bizmaninu, even nowadays. Okay, you'll speak to your Sephardic poskim. I'm not the one that could really represent that position. But anyway,
they still do some form
of Yibum. They certainly have been doing it. Meaning, as far as the halach is concerned, in terms of the actual practice nowadays, I don't know. V'chi asu l'kamed Rav Amar lo yibayis chalotz yibayis yavam b'didech tala rachmana. So when the matter came in front of Rav, meaning a Yibum case came in front of Rav, so he told him, you have choices. You could do chalitza, you could do Yibum. It's up to you. Yibum. So Rav gave the person the choice. Rav Yehuda savrein kofin. And Rav Yehuda also was of the position that we don't force, meaning we don't force chalitza. Meaning if they want to do Yibum, that's fine. So now what we're going to see together is the Gita de Chalitza. Don't get confused. In other words, Gita over here just simply means document. In other words, what we're going to be doing now is that we're going to be actually reading the Chalitza document as recorded by Rav Yehuda. And it's going to sound like this. It's going to read like this. So it tells the story of this woman who approaches this man for the mitzvah of Yibum. Okay, all documents were written in Aramaic, right? We knew that. Okay, so lebeidina v'ish damud inhu de'achu demisna me'abenihu, and we were informed that this man over here is the paternal brother of the late of her late husband. The arm relates obviously Abin Yavam, and we said to him, if you want to do Yibum, fine. V'ilo. And if you don't want to do Yibum, itla le reglechti amina, v'itla la ragla, v'itla la ragla di amina, vishara sine. So what you're going to do is you're going to stick out your right foot and she's going to take off your shoe. Me'al ragloi, from your foot. V'rakban payo, and she's going to spit in front of you. Right? A common misconception. People think she spits into the shoe. Okay. I see how that played out, but it's a misconception. So, V'yirakteban payo roki demischazel lebeidina, and she's going to spit, and it's going to be spit visible to the Beis Din. Al ara, on the ground in front of him. Okay, that is the get document. Sorry, that's the yibum / chalitza document. In this case, chalitza. Ever Rabbi Chia bar Avi Masayim bar Mishmei de Rav Yehuda va'akrivu ma dechsiv b'sefer raisa demosha. Okay, and one addendum added by Rabbi Chia, and that is that. And we read the psukim that were in Taurus Moshe, meaning she has to read the psukim, right? We will go through later in the Masechta, an entire perek later in the Masechta dedicated to how chalitza is done. We just got the short version of the story because we just got to read the actual chalitza document. But it involves the removal of a shoe, a spitting, and kriyas psukim. Okay, three parts of the chalitza process, which we're going to be discussing in much greater detail. But meanwhile, today we get to the two dots. Ishtamudinu. So, in the document, what did we just read together? And we were notified that this is a paternal brother. We were notified? Who's sharing this news? So, a debate in terms of how Beis Din verifies this information. Do they need Edim? Or can just a family member say, yeah, that's his brother, a paternal brother? So the Gemara says this does not fall under the category of Eidus, this falls under the category of Gilui Milsa. Okay? Gilui Milsa, kind of hard to put into English in terms of what exactly that is. Okay, I know historically I said self-evident. I'll say it again. In other words, you're just revealing information. But in other words, this is not Eidus, and therefore anyone can go ahead and inform based in that this is in fact a paternal brother. It does not have to be formal Eidus to do so. Okay, good. We're in a good position. Let's quickly recap our daf today. I know we went long. Okay, anyone still listening? God bless you. Okay. I know we went long. Okay, today what we did is that we first went over the Mishnah Lamed Chesem and Aleph. That's yesterday's daf. And the Mishnah over there says that her assets while she's a Shomeres Yavam, what's the story with her assets? While she's alive, go ahead, sell them, gift them. And after she died, so a debate in terms of what happens to her assets. Why are we debating? Meaning it's her assets, right? So why are we debating? So that's the big question. That's really the big question. So the Gemara, since yesterday's Mishnah, went over not one, four different pshatim in terms of how to understand the difference between the Reish and the Seif of the Mishnah. And I'm not going to go over each of the positions, but in order, as presented in the Gemara, it was Ula, Rabba, Abaye, and Rava. And that takes us all the way to Lamed Tes Amud Aleph. On Lamed Tes Amud Aleph, after going through which of the four ways, which of the ways does it read easiest in the Mishnah, Rav Ashi said really it reads easiest for Abaye. Okay. Then we went over the last part of the Mishnah. The Yava marries the Yavama, Mazel Tov, their husband and wife. Lagabe, what halachas? In terms of separation, get, not chalitza. Can he remarry her? The answer is yes. Okay, we had havaminas, but that's a story. And then finally, the last thing that we discussed regarding yesterday's Mishnah is how is that ksuva going to be secured? With the assets of the late brother. That's how it's going to be secured. Why? Because hikna lo min hashamayim. Because this shidduch over here, he didn't choose her. Hashkacha chose her. HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose her for him. And so therefore the chachamim said, okay, so you don't have to use your assets in order to secure the ksuva in the event. However, it said the Gemara that the brother died penniless. So then you are going to have to secure your assets against the ksuva because, again, the whole purpose of ksuva is to make you think twice before letting her go. Next, the Mishnah. The Mishnah told us that the mitzvah of Yibam is by the gadol. If he says no, then we go down to the other brothers. And we ask them. If they say no, we go back to the oldest brother. Oldest brother says, why don't we wait? You never know. I have a kid brother. I got another brother who's traveling and he'll come back a year from now. Why don't we wait? And we say, no, why do we not wait? And let's take care of the mitzvah right now. Even though that means they're going to do chalitza, but let's take care of it right now. A machlokus in the Gemara on the bottom of Lamed Tes Amud Aleph regarding what's preferable, chalitza of the oldest brother or yibam of the younger brother. So in the first version, that is actually on the table for a debate. And the Gemara goes over the sides of the debate, and the Gemara goes over the Mishnah in terms of which is more readable in the Mishnah. On the Amud Beis, Lamed Tes Amud Beis, a different version of the Machlokas. If it's a choice between Chalitza's Gadol or Yibam of a younger brother, Yibam is better. Yibam is better. What if, let's say, everyone is saying no to Yibam, everyone's saying fine with Chalitza. Is there a preference to go to the oldest brother? That is open for a debate. Again, Machlokas Amaraim, and the question of which way does that read into the Mishnah. And finally, Yibam or Chalitza, which one's better? So the Mishnah Bechara says, from a fundamental standpoint, of course Yibam is better. But people started doing Yibam for the wrong reasons, meaning not L'shem Mitzvah, so then a preference towards Chalitza. That's the Mishnah Becharas. Our Gemara points out the practices of the earlier generation Amorayim, Rav and Rav Yehuda, is that they didn't force Chalitza, meaning if, in fact, the couple elected to do Yibam, they allowed them to do Yibam. And then at the end, we went over the actual Nusach of Chalitza. How does it sound like? How does it read? Okay, and then we were medayik one word, right? Beis Din knew that's a paternal brother. How did they know? A family member told them.